Welcome to CSEK News, the only news source in the North truly dedicated to local stories on the ground. CSEK News addresses the diverse needs of the underserved communities between Burns Lake and Haida Gwaii through firsthand stories and in-depth interviews. CSEK News funding is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially support campus and community radio stations in Canada, as well as the Government of Canada. We are your hosts, Pam Hassan and Dan Messick, and we are on the dial at 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio. Our call letters are CSEK, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Follow CSEK News online at smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Smithers Community Radio.
Today on CSEK News, the northern goshawk is synonymous with mature and old-growth forests of northern BC. For decades, loggers and foresters would see the birds constantly, whether they were dive-bombing heavy machinery or letting out the unmistakable... In almost every forest landscape, you could find a nesting goshawk. But over the last 30 years, industrial, large-scale, clear-cut logging all over British Columbia and elsewhere has resulted in the slow demise of this territorial bird. What was once a common sight in many forests has now become a sight of the past. Although these birds were once a healthy gauge of an intact forest, today their dwindling numbers echo a silent, alarming reality. Empty goshawk nests and larger clear-cut forests. At one point, goshawks were found all over Europe, parts of Asia, and almost all of North America except for the high Arctic. But they are particular raptors, very territorial, and space their nests almost exactly 100 meters apart from each other. You could almost literally map out a forest with the location of goshawk nests in perfect patterns. But they breed slowly, and as more and more old growth and mature forests are logged, fewer and fewer goshawks have survived. At the same time, recording accurate numbers of these birds and nests were difficult, as many nests are so well built that they last for years without birds distorting data counts. Although there are some protections for northern goshawks, after years of intense logging, they fall way short. And now the northern goshawk is one of the most endangered species in the world. One scientist is trying to bring attention to this dire situation after documenting and researching the northern goshawk for the better part of 30 years. Frank Doyle has an intimate relationship with the northern goshawk, and although he still has hope for the survival of these majestic raptors, he fears their demise in many parts of BC may not be far off. Stay with us.
I'm Frank Doyle. I'm an ecosystem biologist, scientist, and I've been working in the Bulkley Valley in the Skeena region since 1996. And I was invited down here from the Yukon, where I was working on ecosystems, working with a whole range of species and birds and animals and with the nations and with government and students, looking to understand how all the pieces fit together. And while doing that work, I was getting phone calls from government and researchers in Skeena region asking me about this bird called the goshawk, because they wanted to manage for the goshawk and they wanted to know how to keep the goshawks in the landscape. And eventually they said, can you come and help us? So that's why I ended up in the Skeena, and that's why today we're driving up the Date to go and look at one of the first goshawk nests we found up on the Date Creek Forest Service Road.
Now tell me about Date Creek, because I've been up here looking at the experimental forest, some of the work that your colleagues, other folks have done in the past about around logging, but there's a lot of other intricacies to this work. So maybe tell me a little about what you know of the Date Creek Forest.
So the Date Creek Research Forest was similar to other research forests that British Columbia has throughout BC, where we looked at different forestry approaches to forestry, of taking single trees out or patches of trees out and clear cutting to see how we could manage the ecosystem, the stewardship component, as well as grow trees. So it covers off both trying to grow trees so we can have a new harvest and fiber, as they would say in the forestry, for the future, and also how do we manage and keep our wildlife, So this is one of those examples. And it still has a goshawk that I work with. There's still a goshawk territory at the Date Creek Research Forest. And as we're going to hear the next few days and of our work today, most of the birds are now gone. But in places where we kept structure in the forest, where we kept the patches, we still have these birds.
I guess on that same note, you know, what kind of impacts, you were just telling me about it, like we've seen the impacts kind of slowly moving west over these last decades. Tell me a little about what you've seen. You kind of laid it out there from Prince George and now to the lakes. And we're starting to see some of it here in the Skeena region. But what is kind of the major issue that you've seen, the impacts of the forest that hinder the production or the survival of goshawks?
Well, for goshawks, they rely on all the birds and animals out there as their food. They're a large hawk that lives in the forest, and they're the apex predator within the forest. And they eat the grouse and the jays and the woodpeckers. And if they don't have enough of those different species, then they don't have enough food, and then they can't breed. They don't leave because it's their home, but they just don't breed, or the young don't survive. And eventually, when they die, there are just no goshawks. And so what's happened in the lakes and Prince George and Quesnel areas is we've harvested too much of the forest, clear-cut too much of the forest. And if we clear-cut, we remove the structure and the snags and all the forest attributes they need to hunt and support the prey and to access those prey. And so in the Kispioks here, we still have enough forest because of the research forest that actually still supports that bird. So unfortunately, when we look at the big scale, we still have goshawks in the Kispioks. We still have some birds in the Maurice. But as we go to the east, we have fewer and fewer goshawks. And we've monitored the nests. We've known those nest sites. And most of the nest sites we've found in the lakes, there's over 80 areas where we know the birds had a territory and a home range, raise kids, those birds have now disappeared. And they're not going to be replaced by any other birds because our landscape is just young plantations of forest, and it'll have to be 100 years, 130, 40 years before it'll be suitable for goshawks again. So that's the choice we made inadvertently by clear-cut harvesting our landscapes.
You know, the goshawk, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have not really heard much about the northern goshawk or have much experience, but what is the goshawk, and also why is this species worth saving? Like, what does it add to the diversity, the biodiversity and the ecology of these forests?
The goshawk, we see it as an umbrella species. So it's throughout the forests of North America and Europe, goshawks were a common bird, and they're found right across the landscape, and they're regularly spaced. So in a natural forest condition, then you'll find a territory every 4 to 5 kilometers right through those landscapes. And so they rely on all the birds and animals there as their food. And it tells you, if you have goshawks through the landscape, that you're maintaining your ecosystems. You're maintaining the different birds and animals that we're not monitoring. We're not monitoring other species. We're not monitoring grouse populations or robins or thrushes or any of those other things. And so the goshawk, it was our canary of the forest from a research scientist viewpoint to see how well we are at managing the stewardship values that we purport to want to support as we're harvesting and using our landscapes. And so the goshawks became this talisman of, unfortunately using those key words, showing us that we're not doing very well and we're losing our biodiversity across the landscape. And we're just stopping at a gorgeous little wetland area, which is a sort of classic view of our landscape with a forest behind, and it's full of wildlife and excitement in the summer months. And of course these wetlands is where we get drawn to, but unfortunately as we drive away from our wetlands into our forests, this is where today's discussion will lead. But we see a very different landscape than when I started work here 30 years ago. The forest was very different throughout the landscape, and when I drive into that landscape now, I feel a sadness, and I feel like we're missing an opportunity to actually keep the species out there and keep the biodiversity, which we need for our own souls, but for we need for our own healthy ecosystem, and particularly with climate change in mind, unless we maintain that older forest and those components, then very likely there won't be a buffer, there won't be in a place for our birds and animals to adapt to our climate changing environment. So that's one of the sort of longer term themes that's come through for our work. As climate change has come along, we need the places for our birds and animals to be able to adapt to this changing climate. And if we leave too little, then they're not going to have the ability to respond, because they're already under pressure, and we'll probably lose those species as we are losing species like the goshawk. So you asked about, you know, dedication before, and about, you know, what drives you. What drives me is just making a change. So a lot of the work that I've done over the last few, many years has not been paid work. It's just intuitively, maybe from a different time or whatever, where I just know there's an opportunity to actually still maintain the pieces. I do a lot of work with students, a lot of education, and I get great joy out of doing it. And so if you're waiting for somebody to pay you to do something, then very often, especially if it's something that people don't necessarily want to know or don't say we've got enough of that kind of information, when in reality is what we, the scientists, know, the longer term projects, the longer the project, the better the quality of the information, because ecology is the hardest science of all. Ecology is amazingly complex. Every year is different, the weather is different, the different species in every little square meter are different from any other square meter, if you like. Nowhere is the same. So long-term studies are just critical in the understanding of our ecosystems. So this project is a classic. Well, we've worked on goshawks for 30 years. We published, after about 5 years or 10 years, whatever it was now, we published a paper in the Journal of Raptor Research saying we could do this much logging and keep goshawks. And it was peer-reviewed, both sides of the equation. It was peer-reviewed 3 years prior to logging, 3 years post-logging. And we peer-reviewed it, and it's still out there, and you can go on the web and you can find this publication. And guess what? It's wrong, because the birds, we didn't understand the birds. We didn't understand the ecosystem. So what happened in this case was the goshawk, wherever they're nesting, and their home range, which is that surrounding 4,000 to 6,000 hectares, a huge area around the nests, is required to support these birds. We didn't realize that their home is their home. And even though we've logged too much, we've taken too much away from that territory, the birds are still there. So we were looking 3 years post-harvest, 3 years after the harvest, and going, well, the birds are still there. And so you're good to go. You can take this many hectares of clear cut because the birds are still there. And that was now 20 years ago when we published that work. And it was wrong, because all those places that we had those birds and said you're good to go don't have birds. So this was another part of the long-term studies that are required to tease out what's going on, but to also not fool ourselves into thinking we're getting it right. And so, put another way, when you look at a grouse, the dumb grouse that we're all very familiar with, okay, sitting on the road there. I've worked on grouse now. And so one of the things we found when working on grouse was following the adult females, and we radio collared the adult females. And we did the work for 3 years. This was work on Haida Gwaii. I'm very fortunate to work over there. And after 3 years, we were looking at the survival of the young and, you know, the chicks and what habitat they use and all the usual things. But the thing that struck us was they didn't die. What do you mean they didn't die? Well, we radio collared about 32 to 34 adult birds, females. We put these radio transmitters on the last 3 years. And when you looked at how many birds died through the year, it was like we'd lose one or two females. That was it, as adult birds. So then when you did some basic maths and looked at to see, well, how long are they living? If you just do some very basic without doing a clever statistic program, some of those birds have to be at least 18 years old. And so then you start to realize, as you work with other species through time, that when we start to look at birds and to have ringing band recoveries, etc., a lot of those birds live a long, long time. So we can influence the ecosystem, we can harvest it, we can cut it down, we can put pipelines, etc., and we'll often see the birds and animals still there, because guess what? It's still their home. But the problem is, it's that their young very likely have got a poorer quality habitat, because it's not the habitat that they're evolved to, because we've now changed the environment, and very likely that few of the young are surviving. They've got nowhere to go to when they disperse, And maybe when the parents die from the home range, which they live in all their lives, they don't move around. All these species, once it's set in that first year, where they live is where they live. They don't go somewhere else. And it looks like that then they're just not replaced. When they eventually the adults die, they probably aren't young to fill the gaps, and then there's just a vacuum. But that could take, if it's a grouse, that would mean that it could take 18 years before we would realize that the population's going to collapse after we've done our, after we've taken too much away. So we're very clever at removing forest or at changing our environment, but we're very poor at understanding the impact on the ecosystems mm-hmm. because it takes so long, and each species is unique, has unique requirements. How big's the home range of a chickadee? That's a question. You know, in our landscape, well, the answer is we don't know. How big's the home range of a woodpecker? Mm-hmm. How much, you know, how big an area does it know in the Date Creek Research Forest or in this landscape? We don't know. Martin, we don't know. We're managing all those species, mm-hmm. but we don't know the home range of any of those individuals because it's unique to probably this environment right here with its combination of trees and vegetation. So we don't know. So this is true for all the species, including even the goshawks, is we're trying to manage for all these species within our ecosystem, within our landscape, because we live here, our work, our employment, our communities depend on resource extraction very often, and be it wood, be it minerals, be it the natural gas, all those pieces, and we then say we're going to do stewardship. But the stewardship is the hardest science of all, because in reality, it's really, really complicated, and it takes an awful long time before we realize we got that wrong. And so, and then throw on climate change on top of that, and the challenge is almost insurmountable. And so goshawks, back to where we started the conversation, working on goshawks for 30 years have revealed that story to me, and I've share that with students. I do student mentoring, I do presentations right across Northern BC and in the Yukon, and we talk about how complex the ecosystems are and how it is so difficult to manage that stewardship component. And if it's so difficult, because we don't know where the thresholds are, because each landscape is different, each home range is different, then don't mess with it, as in keep the structure, keep the forest intact. We can take wood out, but we cannot go ahead and clear cut land areas and say we're going to keep species, this species, that species, because it's clearly nonsense. We can't say it like that. So if we can't do it like that, and we actually do want to keep the marten in the Date Creek, or we want to keep the goshawk in the Date Creek Valley, because that's the choice we have. The only species on Earth that can actually make a decision about what stays and what goes. And so if we really want to do that, then we better change how we harvest the forest if we want our kids and our grandkids to actually have the same species sitting on the road, that grouse, as we have had the privilege through our lifetimes. So that's, yeah, so there's a lot thrown in there, but that is really what I feel about when I was sharing the story about the ecosystems and managing and where does goshawks fit in. It brings all these other elements in very quickly, but it's a very, very clear now we have to change how we actually manage our landscapes now. Mm-hmm. It can't be, we'll put a plan together, we're going to think about it in 5 years. The change is happening, it's collapsing right now. So the lakes is already too late. For many areas, we've lost a lot of species. For the same for Prince George and Quesnel, for sure, you know, losing a lot of species in many ways is almost like a forecast, because if you take enough individuals away, you can't have a population. So right now we're still at the stage where we're taking individuals across the landscape. We've got climate change coming along. So we're going to find out in 5 or 10 years when some of those species that maybe live 10 years. How old's a very thrush? How old's a robin? Well, we don't know. It could be 5, 10 years old, you know, quite easily. So a lot of these species is going to take a long time before we understand what we've done. And so we better change what we're doing if we really don't know what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And again, with climate change, to allow species to adapt, to allow our environment to stay more intact, for those species to have a safe home where there's no other pressure on them. So it gives them a chance that when the climate changes with the heat or the drought, we can have more bad years, and those birds and animals can still be there because they still have some of the key pieces they need.
All right. Okay, so what I'm doing here is I'm just going to look for a goshawk. So if we're looking for a goshawk to see if the bird is breeding here this year, we actually have a machine here called a a playback where we play the call of an adult goshawk and we pretend that we're a goshawk moving through the landscape. And if we get too close to somebody else's nest, that bird leaves the nest and comes screaming at me to chase me away. So that's how we find where the nests are, because the birds are quite quiet and secretive. But if they hear another goshawk, they're going to come in and try and chase it away. So we use that knowledge to help us survey and find the birds. So this is the call of an adult goshawk. So I'm playing the call all around to, so the noise carries all around, and then I'm watching to see if a bird comes flying in. And if I know where the bird comes from, then I can follow that line right back to the nest site. All right, so it's now later in the breeding season, and we know that the young goshawks have left the nest, and we're looking to see where those young birds are. So we'd like to map how big an area that the young birds need inside the forest. And to find the birds, we're going to use the begging call of a juvenile goshawk. So when the kids are out of the nest and they're hanging out for a month or two, waiting for food from the adults, they sit in the tree and they will beg regularly, or they'll beg and call to each other. And so we use that same call, the begging call, to find them. So here we are, I'm going to play the begging call of a young goshawk to see if there's any goshawks sitting not far away in a tree watching us. And then I wait and see if there's a bird responds. And these calls were very common in the landscape. So anybody who's a forester, anybody who was working the forest would know the call of the goshawk because they would see birds regularly. And so what has happened over the last 30 years when I play these calls or I show pictures of a goshawk, people now don't know what I'm talking about because it's not a bird they're familiar with. So that's part of the change of our landscape. As we lose the goshawk in this case, people don't recognize the bird, and they don't know what we're talking about when we start presenting and talking about goshawks. But your dad and your grandparents, they would have all known goshawks. There's a village on Haida Gwaii named after the goshawk. So they were a very common part of our landscape, and it's just part of that change that's taking place, unfortunately, over the last 30, 40 years, large part as a part due to clear-cut harvesting. And there's a Stellish Jay behind us who's calling because I did the call of the goshawk, and Stellish Jays are prey for goshawks. So the jay has just flown in here to try and see where this goshawk is so they can chase it away if they can. So that's beautiful. Great to see the jays.
You're still trying to bring about some change, influence the next generation of ecologists, of biologists who are coming, you know, through the line, and try to influence what they choose to do, how they choose to operate and approach this work. But going forward now, after looking and seeing and being part of what's happened in PG, what's happened in the Lakes District, and now seeing kind of this happening here, what's kind of the hope or your insight or thought for the future of the northern goshawk in this region? What really needs to be done in the short term before it's too late, even here in the Skeena?
Well, that's a good point. So we've spent many years now, the back end of our research years, our aha moment when we realized where the populations were going, what the drivers were. We've identified on the landscape at the larger regional scale where those birds still are in the landscape, where there's enough habitat without any doubt there will be birds out there. And we've identified those areas, and you can go ahead and look at those landscapes and decide to manage those differently. You can decide that that's the area where we're going to do select harvest. We're going to do patch cuts. We're going to take wood out, but we're going to maintain the structure. So in the Skeena region, certainly in the Kispiox, some in Bulkley and in the Kalem, I'm just thinking regionally, that's the area I know well, then we can still have goshawk. We can have our cake and eat it, if you like, by managing our landscape differently, and goshawks being an umbrella for all the other species that we're not monitoring, be it the fur bearers, the fisher, all those other things. So as an indicator, as a tool, if you like, the goshawks, maintaining goshawks will maintain biodiversity for a number of species, but we don't know where the home ranges are for those individual species. We can actually maintain those species in those landscapes with some confidence. And so that's the real, that's the good news going forward. There are some places like this in the lakes and the Maurice and the Bulkley, but there's far fewer. If you do the numbers, you really don't have enough areas to maintain a population. But if you decide to change what we do, or let areas grow back up through restoration, you can have birds, you know, support birds in the future. But you have to have places those birds live right now, as those forests take another 60 years to grow back. And then you have to decide where those areas are and manage those areas in the future differently. And these same discussions are going on Haida Gwaii right now. Anywhere where that we're working with goshawks or working with ecosystems and old growth species, we're looking at restoring. Where can we restore, and where can we maintain the populations right now, such that we have somewhere for birds and animals to come from to repopulate our restored habitats. Anyway, that gives you a good idea of where I, and so I enjoy this. This is the message I've been sharing at various presentations. This is the message I share in presentations to students. I do student mentoring, but I present it, do semester classes, and what do I talk about? I talk about inspiration. I talk about the future, and I talk about the possibility that is still right out there right now. Mm-hmm. But we have to change what we're doing. We have to look at restoration and harvest differently in the future, and we have to harvest the old growth or the older forest right now, I would say, without taking away more of the structure, without taking away the opportunities, again, with climate in there as well as being an extra pressure that we have to give our ecosystems and ourselves a chance. And it's by changing what we do, I'd say, right now.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.